Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, March 19th. I'm Alan Shartok. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, bringing navigational bronchoscopy, 3D mammography, and hidden scar breast surgery to cancer care for the greater Saratoga community. SaratogaHospital.org for more information. Joining us on Are We Lucky on this Medical Monday is Dr. Robert Sachs. He's an ophthalmologist, retinal specialist, director of retina services at Ophthalmology Consultants of the Capital Region. He's here to answer your questions about eye care and treatment. There will be hundreds of people who want to talk to him about that. So 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Sachs, your calls all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us today is ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. Dr. Sachs is a retinal specialist and director of retina services at Ophthalmology Consultants of the Capital Region since 1989. He specializes in macular degeneration, retinal vein disease, and diabetic retinopathy. Dr. Sachs earned his medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry, board certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology, member of several professional societies, including the New York Ophthalmological Society and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. I must say it's such a pleasure, Bob Sachs, to have you with us today, because you're a great man and a great doctor, and we appreciate your being with us.
Well, thanks, Alan. Appreciate being here.
To be part of today's conversation, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So, ladies and gentlemen, the phones are already loading up. They don't take too long, these calls, so what you want to do is get online, otherwise you won't make it. I just want to tell you that. So we've already got five people on the phone, and as usual, we'll go to Jim in Matamoros first. Jim, you're on.
What is the usual cause of keratoconjunctivitis, sicca, or dry eye, and are there any new treatments?
Dry eye, very common these days. Getting older is one of your main causes. Certain medications, blood pressure medicines, antihistamines can cause dry eye. It tends to be caused by a lack of production of the tears that coat the eye. And as a result, the eye becomes uncomfortable. The vision becomes blurry because the tears act as a very important refractive surface on the eye. And what we do to try to help people with that is find out if their problem is a decrease in the quantity of tears that they're making, or in poor quality, which is also something that limits the amount of tears that the eye makes if they're poor quality as well. So we talk about nutrition. We talk about using artificial tears. There are various techniques we can use to try to increase tear production and make sure that the tears that you make last longer on the eye. There are some new medications out there that work to stimulate tear production. All these things are possible, but they have to be done in a very stepwise fashion so that you do the things that are most likely to work first and move on to the medications later on.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, we'll go to Carol in Newburgh. All right, Carol in Newburgh, your turn.
Hi, doctors. My question has to do with cataract surgery I had about 3 years ago, and my eye has gotten consistently blurry. And he wants to do a laser procedure. Could you tell me what that is and how it works, and is it forever?
Certainly. The cataract surgery itself, just to bring people up to speed on that, is the removal of the lens of the eye that over time becomes opaque and cloudy. Think of starts off as clear like a piece of glass, and it starts to discolor. And it starts to become cloudy. Think of a piece of saran wrap turning into wax paper. So that's the cataract, and the surgery is done, which removes the cataract, but leaves behind a thin membrane, which is actually the back surface of the original cataract. It's a thin, transparent membrane. It's rendered transparent at the time of the cataract surgery by very careful polishing, and usually stays transparent for months to a couple of years. But over time, it tends to opacify. It starts to cloud up. It's a natural process. And when that becomes cloudy enough and the vision starts to become blurry and people will notice things like glare from lights from the TV or from headlights, then it's time to remove that membrane, which is done in the office or in the surgical center of the hospital with an outpatient procedure that takes about 2 minutes. It's painless. And it uses a laser to incise or to break open that little membrane and allow the light to pass through without being obstructed by the cloudy membrane. The procedure, as I said, takes a very short time, totally painless, and very low risk. A couple of eye drops are placed in the eye before and after the procedure, and that's about it. It is a permanent procedure in the sense that that membrane does not come back. So once it's removed, it's gone. And then vision should be optimized at that point.
And Carol, not to worry. It happened to me, and it worked like a charm. Thanks, Carol. Okay, let's go to Harriet in Woodstock. All right, Harriet in Woodstock, your turn.
Hello. Hello, doctor. I had retinal surgery and cataract replacement in my right eye. On November 1st of last year, the retinal surgery was what I believe they call a partial vitrectomy, because I had all the retinal wrinkles and all the wavy lines, vertical, horizontal, and even on round things like, you know, the line of anything is kind of wavy and jumpy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had that, and as of now, today, it didn't work.
In what sense?
There's no still change at all in the wavy line.
Yeah, that distortion can sometimes be more long-lasting or even permanent. If it had to do with a condition called an epiretinal membrane, does that sound familiar?
Yes, yes.
Okay. There's the retina, which is think of the film in the camera. That's where the light is focused to by all the lenses in the eye. And the idea is that the retina is the nerve tissue. That's what actually sees. And its surface has a very thin little membrane that covers it. Think of it like a laminate. But in some people, that membrane becomes thicker and can start to distort. It can start to wrinkle. I tell people to imagine a piece of newspaper that you've placed a piece of saran wrap over very nicely, and it's very smooth, and you can see those newspaper, the print, very clearly. If you were to touch that saran wrap with a little match or something and cause the, or a hot pin and cause the saran wrap to wrinkle at a point, you would see those little radiating lines of stretch, and it would cause the underlying letters of the newspaper to become distorted. That's what happens. And that happens as a natural process in some people. So the procedure involves going into the eye and literally peeling that little membrane off the surface of the back of the eye to try to get the underlying retina to smooth out.
That's what he did.
Exactly. And it works to a varying degree. It depends on how long that membrane had been there, how tightly adherent it was, a lot of features. I would continue to keep in touch with your doctor, of course, and see if he has any other suggestions to offer. It does take time.
Well, that was part of my question. I saw him in February, and I'm to see him beginning of May, and I understand that this actually can begin to improve.
Yes, it does take time. So like I say,
but it takes time.
Yes.
So I'm looking, the time frame I'm looking at is acceptable at the moment.
Yes, I don't know your exact condition, your exact situation, but I would certainly keep in touch with your doctor and let him explain to you.
And also the cataract replacement. Well, I'm very upset, actually, because really they replaced the cataract with a lens, and I requested, I had to fight them to put in a very, very low prescription for near vision. I didn't want to look at you know, far away. I wanted my near close-up vision. And they didn't really do that quite the way I had hoped.
I'm sorry you weren't happy with that.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Okay. Between my two eyes. I got new glasses. That helped a lot. But I'm very concerned about my left eye, and I'm not going back to the I'll go to somebody else.
Harriet, I'm so sorry. We have to take a break, so we have to end this little part of the program right here. I so appreciate your calling. Thank you. All right. Take it away, Zachary.
Support comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, an inpatient rehabilitation and wellness center providing healing focusing on the body, mind, and spirit for those with various forms of addictions. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. Windhorse Naturopathic Clinic, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering naturopathic medicine, oxidative medicine, colon hydrotherapy, and acupuncture, specializing in Lyme disease, now accepting new primary care patients. WindhorseNaturopathic.com. Adelphi University's Hudson Valley Center, offering flexible social work graduate degrees, including a part-time Master of Social Work program, combining on-campus and online coursework. Adelphi.edu/MSW. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And from the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org.
And on to Matt in Northampton with Dr. Robert Sachs. Okay, Matt in Northampton. All right, you're on.
Hello, Matt.
Hi. Hello. I'm 42, and 5 years ago, I had cancer in my retina. It was a melanoma.
Uh-huh, good. I'm glad they found it at an early point.
Yeah, it was. They were watching it for a few years because they didn't know what was going to happen, and it was pretty disruptive to my life. I had to move. Anyways, I went to Mass Eye and Ear, and it's been 5 years, so I've got the, you know, I only go there once a year now. And not a big deal. My eye's basically fine. But there's a relationship between, it puts me in a risk category for developing liver cancer, I guess.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And
the reason is.
So I was wondering the why and how of that. Five years down the road, I feel.
Melanoma is one of the most difficult cancers to treat. And one of the problems that it has is if it gets to spread, it spreads everywhere or can spread everywhere. So the fact that they found it and they took care of it in the eye and the eye is now clear of melanoma, hopefully there's no other places, any place in the body. But they are watching you. They're doing blood tests, I'm sure. Yeah. They're doing radiology of your abdomen. They're doing ultrasounds of the liver to make sure that this thing doesn't spread. And
well, we're just going to start that, really.
Okay, well, then they're going to watch it carefully. But that's the point. It's not that the liver itself gets cancer, but melanoma can go to the liver and set up shop. And that's what they want to make sure doesn't happen. It's one of the prime places that it can go.
Bob, is there a lot of primary melanoma of the eye?
Well, melanoma, the eye and the skin come from the same place embryologically. So if you have moles on your skin, you know, you're encouraged to watch them to look for size or color or some change that indicates possible growth of possibly a melanoma. The eye, similar, but you can't look yourself. We have to do it for you and keep an eye on, if you don't mind the expression, keep an eye on your melanomas, your nevuses in the eye, your moles, and make sure that they don't convert, transform into melanoma.
Matt, thank you. Okay, and now on to Mark in Skodak. Mark in Skodak, you're on.
Hello, Mark.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I had cancer 12 years ago, and due to extenuating circumstances, I had to have 30 hyperbaric oxygen treatments last summer. And it caused my eyes to do funny things. I had just like 6 weeks before that, gone and had my prescriptions fixed and changed, new glasses. And now I'm more blurry in my left eye than my right, but both of them, and my vision is not the best. How long do I have to wait before I can go back to see my eye doctor and get new scripts?
Well, I would start, I would make sure you go to see an ophthalmologist, someone who could look to see if possibly you're developing cataracts or some other issue that might have little to do with the fact that you're under a hyperbaric chamber. How old are you now?
70.
Yeah, there's you're in that range where cataracts may very well be growing and be at the point where they need to be removed for you to see best. And, you know, that would be something that I would start with right away.
You just said something, Bob. Well, one second, that I think people should hear, and that is I would make sure you go to see an ophthalmologist. If you didn't go to see an ophthalmologist, what are some of the places that people go that they shouldn't go?
Well, no, it's not that they shouldn't go. You know, there are people in the area who do eye examinations but are not medically trained optometrists, and they do a fine job of evaluating and diagnosing problems and then sending them on to ophthalmologists if they see that problem.
I see. Okay. Mark, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Okay, now let's go to Mary in New Windsor, but first I'll give you the number, although very few phones to get in on, 1-800-348-2551. Mary in Windsor, you're on.
Good afternoon. I had cataract surgery post about 2 months in one eye and 1 month and 2 weeks in the other. And I'm having a problem in the first surgery with rebound iritis from the Durezol.
Yeah. So you still have inflammation in the eye. That's what iritis is. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm going back to my doctor this week, and I don't know how to broach. I mean, we can't seem to get it under control. What do you think is the next level of treatment? What do you think he's going to talk about? I'm on it. Every time I try to taper off, the iritis comes back.
Okay. You were saying something about rebound. I don't understand what that particular issue, because what you're using,
what
that medication you mentioned is a very strong anti-inflammatory.
Yes.
It should suppress inflammation.
Yes.
But you're saying that when you get off it, that's when it comes back.
Comes right back.
Ah, okay. So it's not truly rebound. It's just that you have an inflammation that's not being permanently suppressed. And the question is, why is that? And there can be a number of reasons that might involve your general metabolism. Blood tests might be indicated. If the cataract surgery was uncomplicated, that's good. If there was material from the cataract that was not fully removed from the eye, that can indicate that. And can there also be a low-grade infection that can cause inflammation in the eye, even over the long term? All these things need to be looked at and ruled out and dealt with.
Okay.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much.
Yes, good luck to you.
Bye.
All right. And now over to you. Yeah, that's a tough call. Andy in Schenectady. All right, Andy in Schenectady, you're on.
Hello, doctor.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Dr. O'Keefe diagnosed my brother and I as having German measles and doing David TI, but Dr. Kennedy says it's Stargardt's. Now, I never really realized just how bad my eyesight is. Now, what happens? Is it as the fetus is forming in the uterus, the optic nerve forms differently, or does it have to do after the child is born? Is it scar tissue or is the optic nerve different? Do I have just peripheral and not central?
Yeah, the problem is that infectious disease during pregnancy is always a difficult situation, and certain parts of the baby's anatomy are developing at certain points in pregnancy, and it depends on what infection you get, at what point along the way, certain things can happen. And you can have damage to different parts of the eye as well as different parts of the body. You mentioned Stargardt's, which is genetic. It's an inherited condition. And, you know, I would continue to talk to your ophthalmologist about that if they feel the problem is, and it wasn't infectious at all, but rather a hereditary issue.
Yeah.
That's a whole different kettle of fish.
And what is Stargardt's, Bob?
It's a retinal disease where you get certain changes in the anatomy and physiology of the retina due to this condition, and it's an inherited retinal dystrophy.
Now, another thing, I was told the one eye goes out, and I was told that was for the maximum visual acuity in that eye. It's not lazy eye. Is that correct?
You mean the two eyes?
One eye goes out a little bit to the left.
Yeah,
and
that's...
I was told that was for maximum visual acuity out of that eye, not that it was a
If you have
eye.
A scar, for example, in the central part of the macula, right in the bullseye area of the back of the eye, you may have adapted to that by shifting the eye a little bit off axis to try to get better vision just off center in that area. In other words, instead of focusing using that central scar area, you focus just off center and you can get better vision that way. Not perfect, but better. And that's an adaptation that may have developed over the course of years.
Yeah. Thank you, Andy. Okay. So, Bob, a very fast question. I recently heard of a case where a little baby, maybe 7 months old, turned out that her eyes were different colors. Have you heard of that?
Well, babies are born with different amounts of pigment. The pigment evolves, it develops over the course of natural maturity. So some babies are born with, a lot of babies are born with blue eyes and then end up with brown eyes later on because the pigment develops. So this may be something that just needs time.
But and what if they're in different eyes? What if the color is different in each eye?
Some people have different color eyes. It's just a fascinating feature. Doesn't necessarily mean anything about vision or long-term viability or anything.
Wonderful. Okay, let's go now to Ross in New Windsor. Okay, Ross in New Windsor, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you.
Yes.
Doctor, is there research into or scientific advancement of eye replacement surgery?
Well, that's a big topic. Eye replacement. See, the eye is actually the retina that I work on specifically is actually part of the brain. It's in development. The brain is forming in the fetus. A stalk of nerve tissue moves forward. That becomes the optic nerve, and then at the end of that, the retina forms. So when we're looking in your eye at the retina, for example, we're actually looking at brain tissue, and brain transplantation is still in the future. Now, there are cell layers within the retina that are being worked on to try to see if we can replace some of those cell layers because certain conditions later in life have to do with the breakdown of certain layers within the retina. As far as replacing the entire eye, that's not possible because, as I said, the retina, the optic nerve connects to the brain, and we don't have means of reconnecting that whole segment. Now, there are parts of the eye that are replaced on a regular basis. For example, the front surface, the cornea of the eye, if that's damaged from any of a number of reasons, from genetic conditions to accidents, corneal transplants are not uncommonly done. And the lens in the eye, we talk about that as cataract surgery. Remove the lens and replace it with a plastic implant. So there are parts of the eye that can be replaced. The entire eye as a replacement, not at this point, but obviously a lot of research is going on to try to help people with various conditions do better.
So, Ross, why do you ask the question?
My mother suffers from macular degeneration. There aren't really markers, according to my ophthalmologist, that I or my siblings will inherit the condition, but they're certainly not ruling it out. She's too old, I think, for any sort of surgery if there was such.
Right.
That's always prompted my interest.
A lot of research on macular degeneration specifically because there are retinal layers that seem to be the first point of metabolic breakdown that they're trying to either enhance with nutritional supplementation, which seems to be an important thing these days, and possibly later on with replacement, stem cell replacement of what we call the RPE is certainly being worked on in many laboratories around the world.
Best question of the day so far, Ross. Thank you so much for calling. Oh. Appreciate it. Okay, so now we will go to, hanging on for 17 minutes, setting a new all-time record, is Mike in Brant Lake. Okay, Mike, you're on. Hello, Mike. Sounds like somebody's below the Hudson River. Hey, Mike, are you there? Mike. Okay, well, Mike blew his chance.
Too bad.
Okay, maybe he'll call back. And now we will go to Elizabeth in Skodak. All right, Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if there has been any research yet into any of the eye ailments, macular degeneration, cataracts, all that stuff, and any connection between the blue light from all our electronic devices and whether or not it affects it or makes it worse.
Well, that's a good point. As far you mentioned cataracts, of course, we talked about that earlier. Cataract surgery is very elegant these days and can be very helpful for people for whom cataracts is the main issue. We talk about macular degeneration, though, and that is a very difficult condition. The metabolic breakdown, a structural breakdown of the central part of the back of the eye, the macular region, and poor vision is the result. There are dry forms. There's wet form where the things can accelerate much more quickly. I can't get into the details, but all are actively being researched to try to find out what to do about helping slow down the process or possibly reverse. I spoke just a moment ago about stem cell transplantation of some of the retinal layers to try to help out. You know, there are other issues that are being done. People are putting, for people who have very, very bad retinal disease, they're trying to implant little sensors into the retina so that minimal vision can be obtained. And hopefully at some point in probably the fairly distant future, they'll be able to have much more significant improvement in vision from that. All these things are actively being worked on. And your ophthalmologist can certainly give you any research information that you might need about pursuing any of these things, if that's something that would be helpful.
You know, Bob,
my eyes have everything, and I'm on my iPad a lot, and I keep thinking, am I blinding myself? Am I hastening?
The blue light issue comes from the fact that ultraviolet radiation, which is even more blue, is known to have deleterious effects on retinal function. And then there is more research these days that blue light itself may be. And a lot of the newer tablets and pads actually have a way of dimming the blue light. There's actually a control within the settings where you can reduce the blue light that is emanated from these tablets and pads because there probably is some long-term deleterious effect of small doses of blue light over time.
As we're getting older, Bob, are we seeing more of this macular degeneration?
Well, yes. It's the actual condition is called age-related macular degeneration. It is related to the person's age, and there's hereditary components, but there are a lot of people develop changes in the back of the eye that need to be identified even before they know they've got anything, and things we can do to try to slow that process down and monitor very carefully. So, again, a good discussion with your ophthalmologist is certainly in order.
Okay, Elizabeth,
come
back?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right. So now, 1-800-348-2551. We will go to Kathleen in Somers, Connecticut. All right, Kathleen, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate your time. My question kind of ties in with the blue light as well. I work a 40-hour work week. I spend probably 6 to 8 hours a day in very bright artificial like operating room lights, and I also use two different computer screens at the same time. And I've noticed that within the last year, I have much more of a hard time with light sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And I went to a doctor for migraines, and he said it was probably directly related to the light. So I got a pair of blue blocking glasses for work. And I didn't know if you had anything to comment on whether or not they're effective or any research that's been done.
Well, the eye has a certain amount of protection of its own. I should have mentioned earlier that the lens in the eye does absorb a certain amount of blue light. But the point is that if you're under very bright light conditions all day, a lot of reflected light, that can cause different people to have different problems. I suppose the thing to do is to try to control your workspace a little bit so it's more comfortable for you. It's not really going to be harmful. Indoor light tends to be filtered and it doesn't have the same range of wavelengths that sunlight does. But you know, it depends on what you do and how often you do it. Sitting at a computer all day, though, has its own set of issues, including the fact that people often don't blink as much as they should on a computer. It's just a natural response. As a result, eyes tend to dry out more, so you have a dry eye condition that's not uncommon. And also, you're focusing at a near point for hours at a time, or at least for minutes at a time, and that can cause a certain amount of eye strain. The focusing system in the eye was really not designed to focus at a single point for extended periods. And so we advise people who are on computers to every 15 or 20 minutes, just look at least 20 feet away for about 20 to 30 seconds. Give the eye a chance to relax, let the muscle relax, and then go back to your work. It seems to allow people to do their work for much longer if they take those breaks on occasion.
Thank you so much for that great call. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine Cardiovascular Care, working to bring modern technology and treatment options to the Capital Region, offering heart care in a community hospital setting. ellismedicine.org/heart. AccSmart New York, Saratoga Springs, offering individualized outpatient counseling and Suboxone treatment for opioid use disorder and medical treatment for alcohol problems. AccSmartNewYork.com. Patricia Dalton Fennell and Albany Health Management Associates for over 30 years, bridging the arts, science, and service, working globally and locally. AlbanyHealthManagement.com. New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts, offering a full selection of hydroponics, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment. Southampton and Framingham, Massachusetts, online at nehydro.com. And from The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com.
Okay, we are delighted to be back with you with Dr. Bob Sachs. As you can all hear, he is a real expert, and we are so lucky to have him here with us. We'll go to Mary, and no, first we have to go to June because she's been hanging on longer. And then we'll go to Mary. Okay, June, you're on.
Hi there.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for having this topic on. I really need it. I have an appointment with a specialist at Massachusetts Eye and Ear, and I've been trying to get a hold of them to make sure that my visit is worthwhile. I've been to two ophthalmologists, and they both say that I have no oil glands in my eyelids. Therefore, they cannot do a cataract. So is that true, and is it worth going all the way to Massachusetts for?
Well, the oil glands of the eyelid are an important part of producing the thin oil that's part of the natural tears. Without that oil, the tears don't work well. And if your eyes are not well protected by their own tears, there is a higher risk of problems at the time of cataract surgery. I'm thinking that's the issue. But at one point, you did have glands. And we see a lot of people who have had glandular issues where they become blocked or not working well, and there are certain things that can be done that help to revive, possibly, the workings of those oil glands to try to get you back some of the function, to try to make your eyes more comfortable and to see better. And, of course, you want to get the eye as comfortable and as well situated as possible before you do any kind of surgery.
So, right. So there's hope, is what you're saying.
Yes, ma'am, there is. I'm hoping that they can give you some information.
I thank you so much.
We thank you. Okay. So, and now, as promised, over to Mary in Graham Hill. Okay, Mary, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know if, after you've had cataract surgery, if you can still be an eye donor.
The part of the eye that is used in donation is the cornea, the front surface of the eye. And the vast majority of cataract surgery patients have normal corneas and can certainly donate their eyes once you're done with them.
Okay, because evidently the cornea is okay, so I can be a donor.
It sure sounds like that to me.
Thanks, Mary.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, and now on to David in Glenmont, 1-800-348-2551. David in Glenmont, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
And thanks for taking my call. I have a call for Dr. Bob Sachs about a condition that I've had for 30 years, central serous retinopathy.
Okay.
Now, in going to Retina Care Consultants in Latham, New York, they have examined and found that the blister on my macula has re-adhered. But the retina itself is damaged.
Okay.
I assume that damage is permanent. Now, I have tried using eyeglasses because I'm 61. I need glasses. My right eye is fine. My left eye is the affected one. But and I tried progressive lenses, and it caused my eyes to fight with each other again.
You've got an area.
What would you suggest?
Well, you've got an area in the central part of the affected eye that has structural damage. The retina, I describe it to people this way. It's a series of nerve layers, supportive cellular layers, blood vessel layers, all sandwiched together in a very, very specific architecture. I tell people,
they were undernourished for quite a long period of time.
Yeah, and that's why we talk about nutritional support, because the other eye is also at risk, even though it shows no sign of it. So that needs to be monitored. Point being that the retina, I tell people to imagine a piece of plywood looked at the edge. You see those layers, they're all sandwiched together and squeezed together nice and tight, and there's a certain structure to that.
I understand the structure, but the fight that my eyes had with each other with a progressive lens setup was not something I was able to adapt to, even though I was told to be patient.
Well,
it didn't end well.
Yeah, the need for progressive lenses requires you to find different focal points on the lens to give you the vision. And if you have the central serous damage in the center of the macula, it might be difficult to line up between the two eyes how to do that. Straight bifocals or trifocals would be your better
choice. I'm going with bifocals now, and that helps, but I'd really rather have a progressive set. Is there a need for me to simply be being more patient and waiting? Or is it a lost cause?
Well, time allows the brain to use the two eyes in conjunction.
It's amazing what the brain will do.
Right, right. But I wouldn't push it. If the bifocals are comfortable, then use those, and you can try again in the future to see if there's a way to merge the two eyes, the vision from the two eyes more
Thank
easily.
Thank you, David.
All right.
And now we'll go to, we're going to go to Brian and Chatham. All right, Brian and Chatham, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
Quick question. I'm 57. I've been wearing glasses since I was 7. I'd love to get LASIK someday so I could go out without glasses. I wonder what you think about that. And then I do lots of tight work, a lot of electronic repair, and I'm wondering if I got my eyes fixed so I could see far clearly how it would affect my close-up work.
What LASIK does is it changes the contour of the surface of the eye to eliminate optical nearsightedness. At the age of 57, you got to be a little careful because you've probably got some developing cataract going on there. Not a lot, but it's going to limit the length of time you have a useful time without glasses. You might need some glasses in the near future. As the lens in the eye naturally continues to evolve into a cataract, it causes changes in your focus point. That being said, however,
my prescription's been pretty steady for about 4 years now.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. LASIK is a possibility, but I would have a very frank discussion with your ophthalmologist. The point is that when they adjust your vision for distance, you'll then need something at the age of 57 to allow you to focus in, where now you can take your glasses off and probably see up close pretty well.
Yes.
You would lose that.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Brian. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We're coming down to the end of the show, and so let's therefore go to Karen in Albany. Karen, you're on.
Hi, Alan. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. Question is, I was diagnosed with dry eye. It was some time ago, and what wound up happening was when I went back to doctors to be checked, she told me that my corneas were pitted.
Okay.
And I never heard of such a thing. And how did that happen? Was it from the dryness or
dry eye? as I say, the reason for tears is twofold. One is to protect the surface of the eye, and the other is to allow the best focus for the eye. And if your tears have been inadequate, there is a possibility of losing some of the surface skin on the eye. It's usually temporary, and when with proper care, you can get that back. I don't get the impression that this is a permanent condition, but something that needs to the corneal changes. But that it can lead to a chronic dry eye, can lead to changes in the cornea that are permanent. So that needs to be addressed, and your dry eye needs to be taken care of. There are nutritional things that can be done, as I say, that really help. There are things that just, you know, using of artificial tears and designing the right type of tear for you is what's most important.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, I'm going to read you one that just came in, and I know we've always talked about this, Bob, when you've been on.
Okay.
I've had cataract surgery in both eyes a few years ago, also had follow-up laser, and now I'm running into very large floater, which I was told was vitreous detachment. I'm only 55. Okay, so, and he said, and we are, and she says, I was also informed there's only one doctor in the Capital District that does this laser surgery to break up this mass. What are your thoughts? I fear instead of one large mass, I'll start seeing tons of small masses. Now, this is something I once came to see you about, so
right.
I know you know a great deal about it.
Right. The vitreous is that jelly material that fills the back chamber of the eye. Think of egg white, and it's mostly protein, and sometimes those protein particles can congeal into these little floaters, and that can be annoying if they don't go away. There are two things that can be done. There is a laser procedure that we can do that literally pulverizes that into many, many small and hopefully non-visible pieces. But what a lot of people opt to do, and we do this quite frequently in our office, is we'll actually do a procedure. We'll remove that gel from the eye through a small opening. It's a outpatient procedure, fairly brief, and it removes the floaters permanently, once and for all. And we weigh the options for each person who comes in with a problem with floaters. A lot of times, given time, the floaters just go away because the gel tends to liquefy over time and the floaters tend to settle out or be reabsorbed. If that's not happening, we do have these options to offer.
Is it true that there's only one doctor who can do this?
No,
that's not true. Okay, thank you very much. All right, and now we're going to go to James in Troy. James in Troy, your turn.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay,
hi, James.
Go.
My question is also about floaters. One of them was going to be, what are they? But you just answered that. My other two questions were, is there an association between Lyme disease and floaters? Because I've heard that.
Between what? I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit.
You're breaking up there, James. What is your question?
What was the second question?
I'm sorry. Well, so, can you hear me better?
James, I'm so sorry.
My other question was, is there an association between Lyme disease and floaters?
Yes. Okay. Lyme disease, which can cause inflammation in the eye, can cause inflammatory particles to be seen in the vitreous gel. It's a whole body inflammatory process, but it can cause issues in the eye. So there can be issues from that. That needs to be explored, of course, blood testing to look for Lyme and possible testing. The other thing to remember is ticks carry much more than Lyme disease. There are several other diseases that can cause other problems in the body. So if you've been tick bit, you should make sure your doctor knows certain testing can be checked out.
I like it, tick bit. Okay, on to Rosemary in Hyde Park on line number 6. Okay, you're on, Rosemary.
Hello. I hope my question is a quick one. Occasionally, I would say not more than every 6 months or so, when I wake up in the morning, I find a very bloody area in one corner of my eye between the eyeball and the corner of the inner corner of the eye. And I've asked my optometrist about it, and she said that it's nothing to be concerned about, but I was wondering, what causes this?
Well, there are blood vessels, very fine blood vessels, that are in the skin, the clear skin that covers the white of the eye. And sometimes those blood vessels can be weakened by any of a number of things. You know, you blow your nose too hard or you rub your eye. But oftentimes it just has to do, believe it or not, with the eye drying out at night and that and a blood vessel that has a little weak spot to it just breaking and a little bit of blood comes out. And it's a little bit of blood, but it spreads out underneath that clear skin and on top of the white of the eye. And it looks like, you know, this red blotch. It's painless. It has nothing to do with your vision. It's called a subconjunctival hemorrhage. But I would try using some artificial tears or even artificial tear ointment at night before you go to bed and see if over time you can kind of make that area remain kind of supple and less likely to bleed.
Thank you, Rosemary. Okay, and now on to Hattie in Athol, Massachusetts. Okay, Hattie, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have a seven-year-old grandson that has been wearing glasses for a couple of years, but the teacher felt that there was a problem with his eyes, and they took him to an optometrist, and the optometrist said there were a lot of things wrong with his eye, the strength and the tracking and, you know, just different things, and that the optimal age to fix this through exercises is 7 years old. Then they took him for a second opinion, and the other person said that's probably, it gave him a full examination again, said this is probably normal development, and we should track him every 6 months, but the normal trajectory is 10 years old, not 7 years old, to fix something like this, to remediate. I call it PT of the eyes. They were going to give him every day half-hour-long exercise, right, eye exercises.
I would make sure that, amongst the opinions you've gotten are from some, at least one from a pediatric ophthalmologist whose specialty is this.
Yes, the second one. Well, actually, they both specialize, but the second one was recommended by a pediatrician.
Yes.
So, but I should ask if it's a pediatric optometrist.
No, ophthalmologist. You want the medical...
Ophthalmologist.
Yes.
Well, the second one was also an ophthalmologist. The first one was only an optometrist.
Okay. So there can be differing opinions, but the pediatric ophthalmologist is the one who specializes in children and the repair, the treatment of such conditions. I would go with that in that direction.
Thank you so much. Okay, now over to Daniel in Northampton. Okay, Daniel, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was diagnosed about 6 or 7 years ago with what's called narrow angle.
Yes.
And we watched it for a few years. I have to be checked by an ophthalmologist. And then this last year, she recommended that I have an iridotomy.
Okay.
And I find myself having a hard time getting myself to book the surgery because I'm afraid.
Okay.
And the other question that I have is, now that in Massachusetts marijuana has become legal, they say that marijuana reduces pressure in the eye. It's good for glaucoma. Is that a possible way to avoid the iridotomy?
Okay, the second thing first. Marijuana, the active ingredient, does in some people lower pressure, but that's not your problem. You have a structural issue where the drainage port that lets fluid out of the eye is narrow. I won't go into the details of what that means. And the iridotomy takes a laser and makes a small punch hole through the iris away from your line of sight. You don't see it, but it provides a second access point for the fluid to get out, so the fluid can't back up and cause an elevated pressure in the eye and what we call an angle closure glaucoma attack, which can be painful and damaging to vision if it were to occur. So if it's felt that an iridotomy is indicated, it's quick, it's essentially painless. People feel only a little twinge. It's done in the office with a laser, and it's protection. It's an insurance that you're not going to get an angle closure attack if you have a structure of the eye that is at risk for that kind of problem.
Very quickly, Bob, what is an iridotomy?
It's a laser. You use a laser to make a small punch hole through the iris that lets fluid pass through in a different pattern.
Thank you, Daniel. Okay, so we are almost out of time. I mean, I can't tell you. Whoever comes next better do it real fast. Okay, and that's Eric in Chatham. Eric, if you can't do it fast, you can't do it. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I have a macular pucker, so-called, in my right eye. The left eye is okay. The question is, the risk-benefit ratio of having an actual procedure to peel right. away some of the scar tissue or just leave it?
I spoke about that earlier. That membrane on the surface of the back of the eye can cause a wrinkle and can cause distortion. The procedure is in the right hands is brief, and it's an outpatient procedure and has a very high chance of certainly removing the membrane and hopefully giving you back some of the letting the retina kind of smooth out a little bit, or at least stopping further progression of the distortion. I would certainly investigate with someone who's very skilled at this particular procedure.
Okay, sorry you can't come back, Eric, because we are out of time. And I want to thank everybody who has left on the line, and that includes Laura of Hillsdale, Ryan of Niskayuna, Fran of Albany, and Joe of Middletown. And Bob Sachs, Dr. Sachs, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be here, Alan. Thank you.
You are terrific. Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowicz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.